International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
You're listening to WYLL AM 580. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Let's take a look at weather this hour for Champaign-Urbana for the rest of today. We can expect it to be sunny with a high of 68 degrees and northeast winds of 5 to 10 miles an hour. By tonight, mostly clear with a low of 47. Looking ahead to tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 75 and then some clouds in the evening. We are going to see a chance of rain return by midweek, partly sunny with a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms on Wednesday, 50% chance of rain on Wednesday night, and then getting into Thursday, about a 40% chance of precipitation. So the sun may not last quite as long as we all hope that it will. Looking at the rest of the state right now, there are still some river flood advisories in effect and a few river flood warnings, specifically for anywhere that is close to the swollen Illinois River at the moment. We're seeing river flood warnings for places like Rock Island and LaSalle this hour. You can find all of those online. We are going to be seeing the floodwaters at Alton, the levee at Alton, reaching a particular point later on today. But taking a look at the actual temperatures themselves, it's pretty fair across the state this hour. In DeKalb, it's 63 degrees. Chicago at O'Hare Airport, it is 64 at the moment. In Macomb, it's partly sunny and 66 with a few clouds right now. Pontiac and Decatur, we can expect it to be fair for the rest of the day with temperatures of 63 and 61, respectively. In Peoria, it is 65 right now. Springfield, cloudy and 62. And Champaign at Willard Airport, it's 63 degrees. Right now it's 64 at Friends Plaza in Urbana. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WYLL.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the Subaru Impreza, with standard all-wheel drive and an EPA highway rating of 36 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at SubaruofChampaign.com or at their location on Route 45 in Savoy.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WYLL. Gay couples in Illinois hoping to have their wedding this summer received some bad news on Friday. The State House of Representatives did not call the bill legalizing same-sex marriage for a vote. Tony Arnold reports on what went into that decision and where the issue goes from here.
All day Friday, the anticipation was high surrounding the same-sex marriage bill, waiting for it to be called. There were rumors about what time of day the bill would be called, about how it had more than the votes needed to pass, about how the votes still weren't there. All day, there was a line of people on both sides of the issue, hoping to get a seat inside the House chambers to watch the debate. There was a rally that was so loud, chants bled through the walls that could be heard at a nearby hearing about guns. Finally, at the end of the day, when it became clear the bill would not be called for a vote, State Representative Greg Harris got a chance to explain.
I rise in regard to the marriage equality legislation.
Harris represents the north side of Chicago. He's the state representative negotiating the bill. And when he spoke, the normally bustling, loud House chambers got so quiet you could hear a pin drop.
Several of my colleagues have indicated they would not be willing to cast a vote on this bill today. And I've never been sadder to accept such a request, but I have to keep my eye, as we all must, on the ultimate prize.
That shouting came from supporters in the audience. Some of those raw emotions of anger and sadness carried over into the halls of the Capitol once the House adjourned without a vote on the bill.
This was cowardice among representatives afraid to take a vote.
Jim Bennett was in Springfield for the vote. He was hoping to get married this summer to his partner of 14 years.
I don't plan that wedding right yet.
Bennett's also with Lambda Legal, a legal service working on issues facing the gay community. He says since the legislature didn't get the votes, he's now focusing on a lawsuit challenging Illinois' ban on same-sex marriage so that maybe judges would allow it. Still, Bennett, like many other advocates, wanted a vote on marriage so that if it did fail, he knew who to blame.
And so that's why they didn't call a vote, because they wanted to hide behind a process that allows them now to go for 6 months without us knowing who it is. But we had every right to know which representatives stood with us and which ones did not.
The only thing worse than voting for a controversial bill is voting for a controversial bill that doesn't pass.
Kent Redfield teaches political science at the University of Illinois Springfield. He says there are some realities of politics that go along with Harris's decision not to call the bill. For one, if the votes weren't quite there on Friday and the bill was called for a vote and failed, advocates would have an even harder time convincing a representative to flip their vote the next time it came up.
You know, we've got this thing in politics where there's nothing worse than a flip-flopper. You know, God forbid that somebody's opinions would actually mature over 10 or 20 years, but those are kind of the standards we apply.
Redfield says the issue could also give Republicans hoping to be Illinois' next governor some trouble. The state GOP chairman resigned recently after telling lawmakers he supported same-sex marriage. And, in fact, Chicago reporters brought it up Sunday with Republican Treasurer Dan Rutherford at his announcement that he's running for governor.
I would look to have seen that perhaps it should have been called.
Rutherford ended the questions before saying whether he would sign the bill if he were governor. Meantime, the bill could still come up when lawmakers return in October, or before then if they meet for a special session. Representative Greg Harris says those lawmakers on the fence wanted more time.
We will be back and we will be voting on this bill in this legislature, in this room. Until that day, I apologize to the families who are hoping to wake up tomorrow as full and equal citizens of this state.
After Harris's speech, representatives, both Republicans and Democrats, gave him a standing ovation for a full minute. I'm Tony Arnold.
And this is WYLL. Well, same-sex marriage was not the only issue that was not completed when they wrapped up the legislative session on Friday. Here's a rundown of what else did not quite get done.
Illinois lawmakers have spent several years talking about the need to fix what's now a $100 billion pension problem. So when it became clear that they would be leaving town without agreeing on a fix, the disappointment was palpable.
Obviously, this is a session where we have not enjoyed a great deal of success.
Mike Madigan is Speaker of the House. His pension plan failed spectacularly in the Senate. Madigan has significant differences with Senate President John Cullerton over how to address pensions, and their lack of agreement led to an angry statement from Governor Pat Quinn. Cullerton took it in stride.
It's not because we didn't try. And people shouldn't be, there's no blame to go around. It's just people have different positions, and it's difficult to get 30 votes on them.
Lawmakers also rejected a plan to shift pension costs from the state to colleges and universities. Few issues attracted as much attention as same-sex marriage, but that didn't even get a vote. Representative Greg Harris, the Chicago Democrat who sponsored the legislation, says he did not think he had enough support to get it passed. In an emotional speech, he said some lawmakers promised to back same-sex marriage when they returned to Springfield in the fall.
Until that day, I apologize to the families who are hoping to wake up tomorrow as full and equal citizens of this state.
Despite that unfinished business, lawmakers did approve regulations for hydraulic fracturing, as well as a system to allow people to carry concealed firearms. Lawmakers aren't scheduled to return to Springfield until October, but Quinn says he plans to meet with House and Senate leaders on pensions next week. I'm Brian Mackey.
Well, the cool new gadget you just bought is probably covered by lots and lots of patents. And what if you have to repair your gadget? The U.S. Supreme Court recently held that patent law only allows so much tinkering before patents covering the gadget are considered to be infringed. Jay Keeson has more on this week's legal issues in the news.
Normally, the sale of a device covered by a patent means that the patent holder cannot sue the purchaser for infringement. The patent right is considered exhausted because the patent holder has already been paid for coming up with the invention. When the device breaks, people would typically fix it rather than pay for a brand new one. The problem is that if the product is so broken that it requires rebuilding, the purchaser is essentially making a new device. This rebuilding infringes the patent, and the purchaser can be sued for these actions. The idea is that the patent holder deserves to be compensated for someone making a device covered by the patent, but not for a purchaser who uses the purchased product as it was intended to be used. This issue is especially interesting when it comes to patents for genetically modified seeds. Yes, seeds. Seeds that have been genetically altered are eligible for patent protection. This is because, unlike seeds found in nature, genetically modified seeds are a novel product of human ingenuity. Here's the interesting part. Genetically modified seeds naturally grow plants, which naturally produce more seeds. These reproduced seeds are not normal seeds, but copies of the genetically altered seeds from which they're produced. The issue, then, is whether the reproduced seeds are also covered by the patent, or do they not infringe because the patent right has been exhausted by the original sale of the GM seed. The U.S. Supreme Court recently weighed in on this question in Bowman versus Monsanto. In that case, a farmer had bought patented seeds from a grain elevator and used them to grow genetically modified, pesticide-resistant soybeans. He then kept the soybeans and used them to plant subsequent crops instead of buying new GM seeds from Monsanto. Monsanto did not like the fact that Bowman was obtaining its patented seeds this way and sued, claiming the reproduced seeds infringed its patent. Bowman argued that he was using the seeds just like they were intended to be used. He was saving the seeds that the patented seeds reproduce naturally and not creating the patented seeds himself. The Supreme Court did not buy Bowman's argument and unanimously held that he infringed Monsanto's patent by replanting the seeds produced by the plants grown from the originally purchased seed. The court noted that if every farmer did as Bowman, companies like Monsanto would not invent patentable seeds because they would only profit from the sale of one batch of seeds. After this, farmers would simply reproduce their own seeds without having to pay Monsanto. The decision seems simple enough. After all, it was unanimous. However, it has interesting implications for an increasingly important area of law and society. Many products now incorporate self-replicating elements, such as 3D printers. 3D printers are able to produce copies of three-dimensional objects and have been used to make replacement parts for products. These printers can also be used to create entire products. Would the replication of a 3D printer from another 3D printer infringe the patent covering the device? By Monsanto's logic, it would, even though the device is being used precisely how it was intended to be used. Another interesting area that may be affected by the Bowman decision is biotechnology devices that self-replicate. These inventions incorporate living elements that naturally make copies of themselves. Examples include novel DNA sequences and cell lines. While the Supreme Court warned of the limited applicability of the Bowman decision, its logic is far-reaching and broadly favors patent holders over users of self-replicating technology. As strange as it may seem, these users may find themselves in court if they use their patented products exactly as the products naturally function. I'm Jay Kaysen.
Professor Jay Kaysen directs the Program in Intellectual Property and Technology Law at the University of Illinois College of Law. You can hear Legal Issues in the News every Monday on Morning Edition or listen online at will.illinois.edu.
Hi, I'm Kevin Kelly, host of Live and Local on FM 90.9. The Penguin Project, a program that allows children with disabilities to participate in community theater, originated in Peoria. Next weekend, the McLean County chapter will present the classic musical Peter Pan. I'll talk with artistic director Tricia Stiller on the Monday edition of Live and Local. We'll also hear about Saturday's concert of space-inspired music by the Urbana Pops Orchestra. Please join me for Live and Local weekdays at 4 p.m. on FM 90.9.
WILO programming is made possible by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, announcing the 2013-2014 season featuring El Nora, the Guitar Festival, Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Diavolo, Nathan and Julie Gunn and Friends, the Joshua Redman Quartet, and more. Tickets are on sale Saturday, August 10th at 10 a.m.
And now the Writer's Almanac for Monday, June 3rd, 2013. It's the birthday of poet Allen Ginsberg, born in Newark, New Jersey, 1926, raised by a family of Russian immigrant Jews. His father was a high school teacher and a poet, and his mother struggled with mental illness her entire life. At Columbia University, he fell in with a group of poets and artists that included Jack Kerouac, Neil Cassidy, and William Burroughs. They read poetry to each other and took drugs and had all-night conversations. And sometime in the late 40s, they started calling themselves Beats. When Ginsberg was 26, sitting in his apartment in Harlem, he had a vision of William Blake. He called it a sudden awakening into a totally deeper, real universe than I'd been existing in. But Ginsberg still wasn't sure that he wanted to be a poet. After he graduated from Columbia, he worked as an apprentice book reviewer and for an advertising agency in an office in the Empire State Building. In 1955, he moved to San Francisco, where he became part of the poetry scene that included Gary Snyder and Lawrence Ferlinghetti. In October of that year, he read his poem Howl at the Sixth Gallery. It was a huge success, and it launched a writing career that lasted over 40 years. The poem Howl begins, "I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked, dragging themselves through the Negro streets at dawn, looking for an angry fix. Angel-headed hipsters burning for the ancient heavenly connection to the starry dynamo in the machinery of night. And it's the birthday of Larry McMurtry, born in Wichita Falls, Texas in 1936. His early novels were set in the Southwest, on the frontier and in small towns. They included Horsemen Pass By and The Last Picture Show, both made into movies. Then in 1981, he wrote an essay in which he said that the cowboy myth had become an inhibiting rather than a creative factor of our literary life, and that there was really no more need to be said about that. The future of Texas literature was urban, he said. Now what we need is a Balzac, a Dickens. But a few years later, he published one of his best books, Lonesome Dove, an historical novel about a cattle drive, and it won the Pulitzer Prize. Larry McMurtry, who said, "The earth is mostly just a boneyard, but pretty in the sunlight." And it's the birthday of Josephine Baker, born in St. Louis, Missouri, in 1906.